This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com.
Alrighty, welcome back in, everybody. Kicking off hour number two with Longshore and McKnight. It is the Budweiser Sports Line. Got a lot to talk about. And that's why we bring in our friend, Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, joining us on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline. Tony, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm just fine. Thanks.
We are looking now mournfully, very mournfully, backwards at the college football season, particularly what I think was one of the great college championship games I've ever seen. When it was all over, and I didn't have a rooting interest either way, Tony, I sat back and I thought, God bless college football. It has been a blessing to us, and it never fails us. A great game. What a great cap to an interesting year of college football.
You know, you're absolutely right. It was an incredible season. I went back and did a column for Gridiron Now that is up this morning, and just about looking back at the memories of this season and stuff that happened. And it was, I think I had about 10 memories. It was really hard just holding it to 10. And then it was capped off by arguably the best national championship game we've ever had, given all the historical things that were going on there. So, yeah, it was a great season. And you're right. You know, college football always delivers. It never lets us down. We have made moments when we're disappointed, but on whole, it never lets us down.
Tony, what side are you on in the Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian debate of how that was handled by Saban, and should it have been handled that way?
Well, first of all, to quote Nick Saban, there's not a debate. Let's understand that. Knowing what I know now and people that I talk to, I don't think Nick Saban had any choice. That it was just a difficult situation. It was clear that Lane was struggling. It was also clear that his attention was not 100% on the game because he had other things on his mind. So, listen, the reason Alabama lost on Monday night had nothing to do with who was calling the plays. It had everything to do with Alabama's defense being on the field for 99 plays. That's the reason that Alabama lost the game.
And somebody was telling me, we were in conversation, that the two big stats in a game were the 99 plays and Alabama's 2-for-15 on third down offensively. I said, to me, that's one stat. You know, the reason why they were on the field for 99 plays is because they only converted 2-for-15 third downs.
Well, Gary Danielson was on with Paul Feinbaum the other day, and he rolled off seven straight Alabama possessions that were all 1 minute and 30 seconds or less, okay? You can't do that because you're going to leave your defense out there. The other factor in that is the injury to Bo Scarborough, because normally when Alabama's up 24-14 in the fourth quarter, you run the big fella to run the clock. Well, the big fella wasn't there. And, I mean, Damien Harris and Jacobs and those guys are good backs, but they're not power possession backs. And ultimately, I think that's what did Alabama in.
You know, Tony, we talk about Alabama's defense under Nick Saban being so good, and it has been. But you look at it closer, the two games against Clemson, one of them was a win, one was a loss. The loss against Oklahoma, the loss against Ohio State, the Ole Miss games over the last several years. This defense has given up a lot of points.
at times it has. And one of the things that these teams have done, and Clemson did this the other night, and I was told that this would happen at the end. The 50-50 balls to guys like Michael Smith,
right?
Mike Smith, where he goes up and he's big and physical, kind of like a Laquon Treadwell, and just makes the play against the Alabama secondary guy. That's what they did when it got to be crunch time the other night. And so if you've got a good quarterback and you've got big physical wide receivers, that's been the formula to moving the ball on Alabama.
Obviously, here in Montgomery, Alabama, we get sometimes Alabama-centric, but let's looking at it from the other side. What's the moral of the story for Clemson? How'd they do it?
Oh, first of all, they did it by recruiting exceedingly well. I mean, what they've had to rebuild their defense the last 3 years, and they've done it because they have quality depth. They go out and get an exceptional player at the quarterback position, and they coach him up well. But it's all, listen, when Dabo Swinney got the job at Clemson, I sat in his office about 2 weeks later. He says, look, we're going to build a program. We're not building a team. We're going to build a program so that every year people in the top, when they're doing their, excuse me, when they're doing their preseason top 10, they're thinking about us. And that's what he's done. So it's all about building depth in your program, quality depth, and getting good coaches to maximize their talent.
What's going on at Auburn with Rhett Lashley leaving, going to UConn, taking a pretty substantial pay cut to do so?
Those of us who've known Rhett a long time and have had conversations with him, invariably this subject would come up, and the subject would be at some point he was going to have to go off on his own. I mean, he grew up under Gus Malzahn. His professional career has been under Gus Malzahn, and there was going to come a time when he needed to do it. Now, why this particular job is the right one is hard to say. I've traded some messages with Rhett, but my belief is that the time had come. And like you said, he's taken a pay cut, and it's just been a difficult year at Auburn because Sean White just kept getting hurt and getting hurt. And then when Cam Petway got hurt, that was a problem. And so my sense with Rhett is just that it's time. It's time for him to go sort of fly away and do his own thing.
How attractive is that job, and is there anybody who just makes obvious sense to replace Lashley?
Well, any coordinator's job in the SEC is an attractive job because the resources, particularly at a place like Auburn, where you have all the resources you need to be successful. I don't know that anybody really jumps off the page at you. There's a lot of good names I've seen in the media over there. I don't know if they could go get Jeff Scott from Clemson. I don't think they can do that.
Yeah.
But he has obviously proven how good he is. But there's a lot of good coordinators out there. And with Stidham coming in at quarterback, I think it's going to make that guy, whoever that guy ends up being, it's going to make his job a lot easier. Because in these kind of offenses, you just can't be average at quarterback. You just can't. And obviously we've seen what Stidham has done in the past. So I think whoever the coordinator is, he's going to start in a pretty good position.
Why can't Les Miles get a job?
It's been an unusual year. Think about this. Both Houston and LSU hired from within. And when you hire from within, you don't have the domino effects, all right? I thought he might get involved in the Purdue job,
yeah.
But he didn't. Obviously, the Western Michigan job is out there, maybe. And I think you know, the offensive issues have followed Les around. I mean, Les is known to be pretty darn stubborn when it comes to doing that kind of offense, his kind of offense, because he's had such exceptional players to do it. And people want – now they want you to be able to move the ball. It's part of it. And I think that is – I think the fact that he's now in his 60s, I think that's dumb, but I think that's part of it. And I think the fact that his offenses have been very predictable for a very long time.
What are your thoughts? I know this is out of the region. What are your thoughts about PJ Fleck and the Minnesota job? He's so high energy. Is there substance behind the row the boat hype and everything?
Anybody who can go 13-0 at Western Michigan's got something substantial going for them, and it's all about motivating players to get the maximum out of them. Particularly at a place like Western Michigan. Minnesota's had success. They haven't had great success, but under Jerry Kill, under Glenn Mason, I mean, they have been able to put together winning seasons and bowl seasons. So, again, it's a Big Ten job, and there are Big Ten recruits surrounding Minnesota. So, do I think he's going to win a Big Ten championship while he's here? No, I don't. But I think he's going to make them into a consistent winner.
A lot of people are saying the SEC was down in 2016. The win-loss records certainly indicate that. The bowl record wasn't overly impressive. I think a lot of it had to do with the youth at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get experienced and a little bit more confidence, I believe that will change. But in saying all that, Tony, I think there's a handful of teams that really need to win next year. I think at the top of the list, obviously, A&M and Tennessee come to mind. But I got to think there needs to be some improvement in Oxford and Fayetteville and in Auburn as well.
It was a strange season in the sense that normally even if you've got a great team like in Alabama, you've got a 10-2 team that's sort of lurking, you know, who lost a key game there. And that wasn't way this year. There was one great team, a bunch of just kind of okay teams, and, you know, and the teams at the bye, Vanderbilt got to a bowl, South Carolina got to a bowl, Kentucky got to a bowl. So what had been the bottom part of the league sort of moved up a little bit and was sort of scrunched there together. Yeah, there's some places where, you know, it's going to be an interesting off season. When we get to March here in a few weeks, I'll crank up my little spring tour, and it's going to be interesting when I go to Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's going to be interesting when I go to College Station, Texas. And these are some places where they just really failed to meet expectations, and there are questions about the fundamental direction of the program. Yeah, when I go to Knoxville and talk to Butch Jones, he's, you know, they finished with 9 wins again. I mean, here's the amazing thing about Tennessee. They beat Georgia, they beat Florida, two of their biggest rivals, but they lost to Vanderbilt and they lost to South Carolina. That's what drives the Tennessee fans
crazy
nuts. And they should have won the East because they're the best team in the East, no doubt. They had the best personnel. So there's a lot of questions when I get ready to crank up my spring tour.
We look forward to that as well. Always do. It's a great way to get a look at the upcoming season.
As we put a wrapper on 2016, give us a word or a phrase to characterize the championship game follow-up for Alabama. A blip on the radar, a small hurdle, or is it the beginning of a downward slope for Nick Saban's side program?
It's on hold, okay, for 1 year. This team had won 26 straight games. They were 14-1. They were almost went number one wire to wire. And you know what? When the 2017 season starts, you know who's going to be the preseason number one?
I have my suspicions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be number one again. Why? Because they got a lot of really, really good players. And as everything I hear, they're getting ready to sign a bunch of them, much more of it.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing as well. GridironNow.com is where you can follow Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. Great piece taking a final look back at the 2016 SEC season. It's a must-read. You need to check that out along with all of his work that he does. Tony, as always, we greatly appreciate your time, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
GridironNow.com is his latest.